It's a race against the clock in Nepal as humanitarian organizations try to get food, water, and other essentials to some of the most remote parts of the country. Today, a teenage boy was rescued from the rubble 5 days after the earthquake, but the death toll has surpassed 5,000 people, with thousands more injured. With us now from Nepal in Kathmandu, Lex Kassenberg, country director in Nepal for CARE, a humanitarian organization. Welcome, Lex.
How are you?
Well, thank you. Lex, is this still a search and rescue operation, or has it turned to a salvage operation?
Well, there is still some search and rescue going on, but any hopes of finding any survivors, I think, is pretty slim. But there are still rescue teams going around and searching the rubble.
What about infrastructure in Nepal? Of course, there's the infrastructure of the buildings themselves, but the post-disaster infrastructure for helping the injured and helping families. Is there medical infrastructure to help people?
Well, in Kathmandu, there is a medical infrastructure, and they have hospitals, but they are really overstretched in their capacity and ability to help. There is a lack of doctors. There is a lack of medical provisions and equipment. So they're really challenged to deal with it. And that's in the capital. If you go to the districts where the impact has been a lot greater, with literally whole villages wiped out, there are hardly any functional hospitals there. You really have to rely on health posts that have very, very limited capacity and, you know, supplies of drugs and bandages, etc. So it's really a dire situation.
Is there any sense of what's needed in terms of the second phase of the recovery here, caring for the wounded, getting to villages that are remote? What does Nepal need now? Doctors, nurses, helicopters, water?
Well, helicopters obviously is really important if we can get them, because Nepal is a very challenging landscape. The infrastructure in terms of roads is very limited, especially if you look at the tertiary roads, which are basically unpaved. A lot of them have been blocked by landslides or have disappeared altogether. So they have to go back to the traditional system of portering, carrying goods in. And that's a major, major challenge, because some of the places that have been affected are, you know, 2, 3, 4 days walk from the roadhead. So no matter what you try, it will take a long time to get services efficiently and goods efficiently to the people. Now, helicopters would be able to bring it in faster and more efficiently, but it's very, very difficult to get helicopters. There is a limited number in the country, especially from the Nepali Air Force. And they're trying to get some support in from the neighboring countries, but nonetheless, the need is so great, and the carrying capacity from the helicopters here, partly because of altitude, is so limited that we cannot rely on helicopters alone.
Lex Kassenberg, what are the next steps now?
Well, there is still a lot of coordination going on between the agencies about what is exactly required. I mean, there is no question that the need is very high. But as you mentioned yourself during the introduction, the number of dead people is over 5,000. But that is still an estimate. Nobody knows really how many people have actually died in these very remote areas, because communications have been cut off. People can't get in yet. So it's possible that these numbers go up. So the first and most important priority at the moment is indeed to get safe and clean drink water to the people, but also shelter. In about a month's time, the monsoon will start, and people need something above their head to stay dry. In addition, water and sanitation is also very critical. I mentioned already clean drinking water, but also building toilets so that we prevent the outbreak of diseases.
Lex Kassenberg, thank you.
You're welcome.
Lex Kassenberg is country director in Nepal for CARE, a humanitarian organization. Well, 5 days after the 7.8 magnitude earthquake rocked Nepal, its people, both home and abroad, are still feeling the weight of what feels like an impossible task.
We used to walk on those corners. We used to go to school from that corners, and now everything is collapsed. And for us to see that and not being able to be there and help the people, it does make me feel helpless.
That's Nimish Sherpa, a Nepali immigrant in New York who spoke to Takeaway co-producer WNYC about her own desperate desire to help the victims. For the people of Nepal, the birthplace of the Buddha, spiritual guidance doesn't come from one omniscient, omnipresent God. It comes from a search for meaning and understanding, a recognition, if you want, of our own small place in this universe and the impact of our actions on the earth, maybe even as that earth shakes right underneath our feet. Just 10% of Nepalis practice Buddhism, but the majority Hindu population also looks towards a lot of Buddhist traditions for guidance. So for a better understanding of the Buddhist faith that is helping carry the people of Nepal today, we turn to Robert Thurman. He's a professor of Indo-Tibetan Buddhist Studies at Columbia University and an ordained Tibetan Buddhist.
There is a doctrine in Buddhism about what's called karma, which has to do with the fact that people believe that they are the continuation of their own previous lives' causality, and that things bad that happen to you come from things that you related to in the past in a negative way. So even the most incomprehensible tragedy, there is a way of using it when you are a victim or nearby a victim, where you use it to sort of strengthen your ethical resolve. It's sort of a connection of a biological theory of karma with an ethical theory of not being harmful to other people. However, there's a big misunderstanding of that. Some people think, therefore, you can sort of blame the victims when something terrible, a mass tragedy happens to people because it's their karma. You'll hear people say that, oh, it's their karma, which I think some people wrongly think is just a blind fate, but they don't mean that by fate. They mean that they did something in previous life for which they are having a consequence in this life. But on the other hand, there's a doctrine in Buddhism called the Bodhisattva doctrine about having compassion for others, which forbids you for blaming others for things that bad that happened to them, then saying it's their fault because they did something bad. And you don't care whether they did. Everyone has had infinite past existence in the Buddhist view. And so you don't really blame others. When you yourself have a bad thing happen, if you take the responsibility yourself, you can use that adversity to strengthen your own positive ethical outlook and activity. But you never use that to blame another. So finally, it's kind of the Buddhist explanations of things are very flexible, and they are always intended to derive the most useful impact out of something terrible that happens to you. And even in a big tragedy like this, where over 5,000 people have been killed, and probably that number will climb, even those beings, one doesn't go into the thing of, well, that's the whole end of the universe for them, because although they have lost their bodies, they still continue to exist, and they're going to take rebirth either as enlightened or as unenlightened beings. And so one of the concerns that you have in such a tragedy is to pray for those beings that they have a good rebirth and find a good rebirth in the planet or in another planet where they have less earthquakes or whatever you might do. That would be the Buddhist kind of way of looking at it.
Well, there is a strong temptation, maybe a need among all people, I suppose, after a tragedy like this, to ask the simple question, which is why, or why me,
right,
or why
exactly
us? So help us understand maybe a Buddhist or a Hindu or maybe just a Tibetan likely response to that universal question, why me?
Some Buddhists will sort of blame, even though they're Buddhists, they still may have a residual belief in some local deity or a spirit or a ghost or a demon, and they may want to blame that demon, or they want to blame the building architecture department of the Nepali government, or they want to blame fate, like a monotheist might shake their fist at God and blame God, why are you doing this to me, sort of Job. But the Buddhists believe that if you do that, you're just further disempowering yourself, because you're just blaming some faceless external cause that you can do nothing about.
Well, Professor Robert Thurman, you're a Buddhist monk yourself and a professor at Columbia University. So you think pretty deeply on this stuff. Tibetan society, is it a religious society? Is the average person is the average person who's maybe experiencing this tragedy or has family or friends who are experiencing it, are they likely to think about it in a similar way that you're thinking about it?
Absolutely. But their particular focus will be on the people who have died, if they're related to them and especially concerned for them, or even in general, that they receive a good vibration and good help from angelic beings, which the Tibetan Buddhists do believe in the presence of, such as Tara, Vajrapani, powerful ones and very caring and loving ones, and that they receive help in finding a good rebirth. The most important people at a funeral are the people who just died, because they're going on. That's not the end of them. In other words, they don't have the materialist outlook. Just like when you fall asleep and you go unconscious in your ordinary body, you can have a dream experience. So similarly, they're having a dream experience in what they call the between state. They will seek rebirth and hopefully in a human form, a human being will think. So that's a very major focus of concern for people who are bereaved in such a grief thing in the case of Buddhism.
Robert Thurman is a professor of Indo-Tibetan Buddhist Studies at Columbia University and an ordained Tibetan Buddhist. If you want to help the people of Nepal, our colleagues at Public Radio International have compiled a list of vetted nonprofits that are working to provide relief. Visit thetakeaway.org to see the full list. Professor Robert Thurman, thank you for joining us.
Okay, Todd. Thanks a lot, and all our best to everyone, especially anyone who has suffered from this terrible disaster.